Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel says President Trump raised nearly $25 million in less than 24 hours for his reelection bid after he formally kicked things off in Florida last night.
Our radical Democrat opponents are driven by hatred, prejudice, and rage. They want to destroy you, and they want to destroy our country as we know it. Not acceptable. It's not going to happen.
Meanwhile, at an event this morning, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Congress must impeach President Trump if the goods are there. Let's bring in our political strategist, Maria Cardona, Democratic strategist. Hi, Maria.
Hey, how are you? Good to be with you guys.
Doing well. And Matt Mikowiak, Republican strategist. Hi, Matt.
Hey.
Okay, so let's start with this Trump rally. There were 20,000 people in the Amway Center in Orlando last night. Apparently, the campaign rented buses to bring people in from around the state of Florida. Matt, did it move the needle at all?
Well, I think the fundraising hall is significant. You know, I think sometimes people miss the point of the rallies. Certainly, the president likes doing them. He gets great energy from the audience. He likes to test different messages. But really, these rallies are about collecting data. They had over 100,000 people, well over 100,000 people sign up for this event, and they're providing their cell phone number and their email address. I do think the other advantage is I do think they moved beyond some of the headlines last week about polling, internal polling and things like that, and made clear he's running for another term. They're running on a promises made, promises kept message on Keep America Great. So, look, was it a huge success? I don't know if I'd quite say that, but I do think it helped turn the page from last week and makes clear that, that his base needs to help him if they want to see him stay in office and get reelected.
Well, Maria, what do you make of the fact that he didn't mention a lot of the candidates who are trying to run against him? He did talk a little bit about Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, but really he talked about Hillary Clinton.
Well, that says to me is that they actually do not want to turn the page. Trump is it's impossible for him to turn the page, meaning that he is still living in the past. He is obsessed with Hillary Clinton. I know that it really makes him mad whenever anybody points out that she actually got almost 3 million more votes than he did. He can't stand that. He has her on his mind constantly. And frankly, the whole rally was about the past. He is doubling down on the strategy that frankly did help him get elected in 2016. And that is a strategy based on division, based on hatred, based on prejudice, based on rage. It's really interesting that he accused the Democrats of that because that's exactly what he professes and what he traffics in. And he is doubling down on it, whether it's in his rallies or in his policies. When he announced on Twitter that he was going to start deporting the 1 million undocumented immigrants that are in the country.
But this worked in 2016. And Matt, I'm really curious as to why you were sort of half-hearted, I think, in your reaction to last night, if I've got that right, that, you know, it wasn't as good as it could have been. I'd love to hear more from you as a Republican strategist. I mean, we know that, you know, he was greeted by the Orlando Sentinel with a Enough of the Chaos headline, sort of a takedown of President Trump. As he's, you know, coming to Florida, as it's been characterized, saying this is a guy we're not endorsing. He was looking forward in that he promised a cure for cancer and AIDS if reelected and a Mars landing. But that only maybe reminded people that he'd promised a border wall paid for by Mexico and an infrastructure and healthcare plan, and that hasn't happened. But if you looked at the pictures, you saw people really happy. Why did you not think this was such a big plus for him?
No, I thought it was fine. I guess, to me, it looked like a fairly standard rally.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of news there. I guess he rolled out the new kind of campaign slogan of Keep America Great, changing from Make America Great Again from 4 years ago. I just think this was an opportunity probably to make some news, to make some type of announcement, to try a different message. You know, I wrote in my Washington Times column last week about the things I think he needs to do to put himself in a stronger position. Keep the economy strong, put the trade war stuff behind him, ignore the Democrats who are running in the primary. You know, by attacking Joe Biden, all it does is unify Democrats around him. It makes them feel that Trump fears him. It makes them think, well, if Trump thinks Biden's bad, then Biden must be good. I think the greatest thing he has to do is he has to grow his base. You know, the Real Clear Politics average of national polls puts his job approval around 42 or 43%. On the economy, he's around 50%. You know, he's in a range where this could go either direction, and mm-hmm. he's got a huge head start. They're doing significant work on the digital side, on the data side. Raised over $100 million to this point. They have the biggest head start of any incumbent president probably in history. The question is, what are they going to do over the next year to maximize those advantages?
Okay, well, before we move on to some other issues, let's actually talk about some of the people who are trying to run against him right now. And the first debate on the Democratic side is coming up next week. There's going to be two nights with, I think, 10 candidates each mm-hmm. night. We now know who's going to be in each debate. And on one night, Biden, Sanders, and Buttigieg will be on the stage. And on the other night, Beto O'Rourke and Elizabeth Warren are going to be standing right next to each other in the center. Maria, as you look ahead to this debate, these debates with all these candidates, what is the strategy? What is going to make somebody stand out? Because as we remember the last time with the Republicans, when there were so many candidates on the stage, the most outrageous thing was what got all the headlines, and it was almost always Trump.
Right. I think that's going to be the big difference between the Republican debates and the Democratic debates. I think what you're going to see in the Democratic debates are all of these candidates focused on the issues. We know that when we focus on issues, we win. It happened in 2018 when Trump doubled down on bigotry and racism prior to the 2018 elections. America rejected that and they elected Democrats to take over the House. This is what is wrong with what he is doing in terms of what his strategy is. So on the Democratic side, you're going to see candidates talk about health care, which we know Republicans want to take away, talk about women's reproductive rights, which we know Republicans want to go back to the 50s where women were dying. They're going to talk about a fair immigration policy that is not based on xenophobia and bigotry. And they're going to talk about how they're going to give the tools for Americans to live a better life. You're not going to hear talk about hand size or anything like that.
Matt Mikowiak, yes, it will be earnest, perhaps, and it'll be, these news topics, no hand size, and maybe that will, be clear to people. But what are you anticipating?
Yeah, I'd say a couple things. From my standpoint, I think Elizabeth Warren has been done a disservice by getting, the first night with the only she's the only one of the top.
They're
five
calling
candidates.
It the junior varsity.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's a little bit demeaning, but it's obviously not her fault. Apparently, it was random. Who knows? But when you have four of the top five candidates, including Biden, on the second night, I think that the TV audience is going to be a lot smaller. Let's keep one thing in mind. I forget if these debates are 90 minutes or 2 hours, but with 10 candidates on the stage, you're going to have 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes at most for each person. That's actually a pretty low threshold. So I do think the question is, will these debates change this race in any way? Will someone break out? Will someone challenge Biden? How will he respond? Does someone make a huge mistake? From a sort of substantive and ideological standpoint, there's a lot of similarities among these candidates in terms of the ideas they're putting out there, the issues they're talking about. Biden's really the outlier. And so the question is he going to be able to demonstrate that he's the front runner? Is he the front? He's going to be the front runner going in. Is he going to be the front runner coming out? I think that's the biggest question.
Hey, Matt, I just want to take a second, make sure we've asked you as a strategist about mm-hmm. President Trump's remarks on the Central Park Five. He was asked about this yesterday. He's, of course, the one who called for the death penalty back in the, in the 80s for these five young men who were, it turned out, completely falsely accused of a brutal rape in Central Park. Somebody else came forward and claimed that attack. His DNA matched. Mm-hmm. There was never any evidence that linked these five young men. And he was asked to apologize for this. There's a Netflix series going on right now. Here's his response.
Why do you bring that question up now? It's an interesting time to bring it up. You have people on both sides of that. They admitted their guilt.
You have people on both sides of that, Matt. I mean, that is just an echo of what he said about the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. How would you have guided there?
Well, yeah, I doubt he's aware of the Netflix series. I doubt he's doesn't
seem the kind
of person.
You think he's not aware of a major television series?
I don't know. I really don't. I don't think he's sitting around watching Netflix. I just don't think he's digitally connected that way.
But because he took out ads at the time calling for the death penalty. So he's been much discussed because of the series. But you don't think he's aware?
No, look,
if he's not aware, I think his staff did him a disservice.
Right.
Well, either way, I mean, look, I think he was unprepared for that question. It's why he asked, you know, why bring it up? If he knew there was a series, he would have connected that. Look, I mean, one of the things we know about President Trump is that he does not like to admit that he's wrong, even when he is wrong. And in this case, obviously, you know, he's wrong. There's not much debate about that. Oftentimes the press wants to make him apologize for different things, and that goes against his personality type. It's one of his, I think, character flaws, character weaknesses. We all have them. I wish he would, you know, apologize, admit what everyone recognizes and move on. It would be much better.
Maria, just a few seconds left here, but Nancy Pelosi now saying that if the goods are there, you must impeach. Do you think that the needle is moving on impeachment?
Well, I think that's the whole reason why she wants to push for all of the investigations that Democrats are involved in right now. And when you have today, Hope Hicks is testifying and she is answering hardly any questions because the Department of Justice is telling her not to answer any of these questions. I think the American people understand that there are clearly things that this administration wants to hide. And so if Democrats continue on this road, which is guided by Nancy Pelosi, on investigating and on doing their constitutional duty to hold this president accountable, there could be a time where we get to impeachment, and that's where we have to go.
Maria Cardona and Matt Mackowiak, thanks so much to both of you.
Thanks a lot.